mean they can go off and work on whatever looks fun, but it does mean that they are able to try to solve the problems they are assigned in the best way they see fit. It also means we try to minimize dependencies between teams. Notice that I said minimize and not eliminate. At scale, it's just not possible to eliminate all dependencies, but we can work hard to continuously minimize them. Why it works. Product companies moved to this model several years ago, and it's now one of the pillars of modern, strong product organizations. There are several reasons why this model has been so effective. First, collaboration is built on relationships, and product teams, especially co-located product teams, are designed to nurture these relationships. Second, to innovate, you need expertise, and the durable nature of product teams lets people go deep enough to gain that expertise. Third, instead of just building what others determine might be valuable, in the product team model, the full team understands, needs to understand, the business objectives and context. And, most important, the full team feels ownership and responsibility for the outcome. Instead of the old project-oriented model, which is all about getting something pushed through the process and out the door, in the dedicated team model, the team is not off the hook just because something launches. They don't rest until and unless it's working for the users and for the business. Hopefully, you're already a member of a strong, dedicated product team, and now you just have a better appreciation for the intention of this model. On the other hand, if your company is not yet set up around dedicated product teams, this is probably the most important thing for you to fix. Everything else depends on this. You don't have to move the whole organization there at once. You can start a team as a pilot. But one way or another, it's essential that you create or join a durable product team. Principles and techniques. I want to be clear as to why you'll see so many principles called out in this book. When I coach product managers, I always try my best to explain the underlying principles of why we need to work the way we do. I find that when a person reaches the point that they have a solid understanding of the principles, they develop a good mental model for when each technique is useful and appropriate and when it's not. Further, as new techniques emerge, they are able to quickly assess the potential value of the technique and when and where it is best utilized. I have found over the years that while the techniques change fairly constantly, the underlying principles endure. So, while it may be tempting to jump right to the techniques, I hope you will first consider the principles and work to develop a deeper understanding of how to build great products. Chapter 10, The Product Manager. This book is about becoming an excellent product manager, and in this chapter, I want to be very explicit about what that really means. But first, it's time for a little dose of tough love. There are essentially three ways for a product manager to work, and I argue only one of them leads to success. One, the product manager can escalate every issue and decision up to the CEO. In this model, the product manager is really a backlog administrator. Lots of CEOs tell me this is the model they find themselves in and it's not scaling. If you think the product manager's job is what's described in a certified Scrum product owner class, you almost certainly fall into this category. Two, the product manager can call a meeting with all the stakeholders in the room and then let them fight it out. This is designed by committee, and it rarely yields anything beyond mediocrity. In this model, very common in large companies, the product manager is really a roadmap administrator. Three, the product manager can do his or her job. My intention in this book is to convince you of this third way of working. It will take me the entire book to describe how the strong product manager does his or her job, but let me just say, for now, that this is a very demanding job and requires a strong set of skills and strengths. The reason for calling this out so bluntly is that in many companies, especially older enterprise companies, the product manager role has a bad reputation. What too often happens is that the company takes people from other organizational roles, often project management or sometimes business analysts, and they say, we're moving to Agile, and we don't need project managers or business analysts anymore, so we need you to be a product manager. The honest truth is that the product manager needs to be among the strongest talent in the company. If the product manager doesn't have the technology sophistication, doesn't have the business savvy, doesn't have the credibility with the key executives, doesn't have the deep customer knowledge, doesn't have the passion for the product, or doesn't have the respect of their product team, then it's a sure recipe for failure. There are lots of ways to describe this particular role. Some people prefer to focus on the raw ingredients of what makes a strong product manager. Others tend to focus on the product manager's day-to-day activities and what they'll be spending their time doing. We'll cover all that, but to me, what's most important to talk about is what the product managers are responsible for contributing to their team. That's not so obvious for the product manager. It's not that unusual for people to question whether they even need a product manager. If they don't design and they don't code, why bother? This is a clear sign of a company that hasn't experienced strong product management. Key responsibilities. At one level, the responsibilities of the product manager are pretty straightforward. He or she is responsible for evaluating opportunities and determining what gets built and delivered to customers. We generally describe what needs to get built on the product backlog. Sounds simple enough, and the mechanics of that are not the hard part. What's hard is to make sure that what goes on the product backlog is worth building. And today, on the best teams, the engineers and designers want to see some evidence that what you're asking to build is truly worth building. But if you want to know why the product manager role is considered so important today by CEOs and venture capitalists, VCs, it's this. Every business depends on customers, and what customers buy or choose to use is your product. The product is the result of what the product team builds, and the product manager is responsible for what the product team will build. So this is why the product manager is the person we hold responsible and accountable for the success of the product. When a product succeeds, it's because everyone on the team did what they needed to do. But when a product fails, it's the product manager's fault. You can start to see why this role is a proving ground for future CEOs and why the best VCs only want to invest in a company that has one of these proven product people as one of the co-founders. So this chapter is really about what you need to do to succeed at this job. In that spirit, there are four key responsibilities of a strong product manager, four things that the rest of your team is counting on you to bring to the party. Deep knowledge of the customer. First and foremost is deep knowledge of the actual users and customers. To make this explicit, you need to become an acknowledged expert on the customer, their issues, pains, desires, how they think, and for business products, how they work, and how they decide to buy. This is what informs so many of the decisions that must be made every day. Without this deep customer knowledge, you're just guessing. This requires both qualitative learning to understand why our users and customers behave the way they do, and quantitative learning to understand what they are doing, which is what we'll talk about next. It should go without saying, as it's really table stakes for a product manager, but just to be clear, the product manager must also be an undisputed expert on your actual product. Deep knowledge of the data. Today, product managers are expected to be comfortable with data and analytics. They are expected to have both quantitative skills as well as qualitative skills. The internet enables unprecedented volume and timeliness of data. A big part of knowing your customer is understanding what they're doing with your product. Most product managers start their day with half an hour or so in the analytics tools, understanding what's been happening in the past 24 hours. They're looking at sales analytics and usage analytics. They're looking at the results of A/B tests. You might have a data analyst to help you with this, but the analysis of the data and understanding you get of your customer is not something you can delegate. Deep knowledge of your business. Successful products are not only loved by your customers, but they work for your business. The third critical contribution, and the one that is often considered the most difficult by many product managers, is a deep understanding of your business and how it works, and the role your product plays in your business. This is tougher than it sounds. This means knowing who your various stakeholders are, and especially learning the constraints they operate under. There are usually key stakeholders representing general management, sales, marketing, finance, legal, business development, and customer service. Your CEO is usually a very important stakeholder as well. Succeeding in the job of product means convincing each key stakeholder that you understand their constraints and that you are committed to only delivering solutions that you believe are consistent with those constraints. Deep knowledge of your market and industry. The fourth critical contribution is deep knowledge of the market and industry in which you're competing. This includes not only your competitors, but also key trends in technology, customer behaviors and expectations, following the relevant industry analysts, and understanding the role of social media for your market and customers. Most markets have more competitors today than ever before. Further, companies understand the value in making products that are sticky, and this means that it can be difficult for prospective customers to move from your competitor to you. This is one of the big reasons why it is not enough to have feature parity with a competitor. Rather, you need to be substantially better to motivate a user or customer to switch.
Another reason to have a deep understanding of the competitive landscape is that your products will need to fit into a more general ecosystem of other products, and ideally your product is not only compatible with that ecosystem, but adds significant value to it.
Further, your industry is constantly moving, and we must create products for where the market will be tomorrow, not where it was yesterday. As an example, as of this writing, there is a major enabling technology trend sweeping through our industry, which is based on machine learning and other forms of artificial intelligence. I feel comfortable predicting that this will be a major technology trend for at least the next decade, and this is why you need to love technology-powered products. What is possible is constantly changing. If you're not excited about learning these new technologies and exploring with your engineers and designers how you can use these trends to deliver dramatically improved products and experiences to your customers, then you really need to consider whether this career is for you. To summarize, these are the four critical contributions you need to bring to your team. Deep knowledge, 1, of your customer, 2, of the data, 3, of your business and its stakeholders, and 4, of your market and industry. If you're a designer or engineer and you've been asked to cover the product manager role as well, then this is what you need to sign up for. I warned you, it's a ton of work. One additional note. In some companies, there is so much in terms of industry and domain knowledge that the product manager may be supplemented with what are called domain experts or subject matter experts. Examples of domain experts can be found in companies that build tax software or create medical devices. In these cases, you can't expect the product managers to have the necessary level of domain depth in addition to everything else. But these cases are fairly rare. The normal case is that the product manager does need to have or be able to learn the necessary domain expertise. It normally takes about 2 to 3 months of dedicated work for a new product manager to get up to speed. This assumes that you have a manager who can give you the help and access you need to gain this expertise, including lots of access to customers, access to data, and when necessary, training in the tools to access that data, access to key stakeholders, and time to learn your product and industry inside and out. Smart, creative, and persistent. Now that we've seen what the product manager needs to contribute to the team, let's consider the kind of person who thrives in this environment. The successful product manager must be the very best versions of smart, creative, and persistent. By smart, I don't just mean raw IQ. I especially mean intellectually curious, quickly learning and applying new technologies to solve problems for customers, to reach new audiences, or to enable new business models. By creative, I mean thinking outside the normal product box of features to solve business problems. By persistent, I mean pushing companies way beyond their comfort zone with compelling evidence, constant communication, and building bridges across functions in the face of stubborn resistance. The passion for products and for solving customer problems is not something I think you can teach. That's something you either have or don't have, and it is among the first things I interview for when I'm evaluating potential product managers. I assume you have this.
Maybe this is a good time to be very honest with you about the demands of this role.
The product manager position is not a 9-to-5 job. I'm not saying you need to be in the office 15 hours a day, but I am saying that there is a ton of work and it follows you home every night. Pretty much any other role on a product team is better if you're looking for a good work-life balance. Now, I know it may not be politically correct to say that, but I don't think I'm doing you any favors by misleading you. The level of time and effort required by the product manager role is extremely tough to sustain if you're not personally passionate about your products and your role. Perhaps the most important thing I can tell you to help you succeed is that you simply must take very seriously your preparation for this role. Start by becoming an expert in your users and customers. Share very openly what you learn, both the good and the bad. Become your team's and your company's go-to person for understanding anything about your customer, quantitative and qualitative. Work to establish a strong relationship with your key stakeholders and business partners. Convince them of two things. One, you understand the constraints they operate under. Two, you will only bring to them solutions that you believe will work within those constraints. Become an undisputed expert on your product and your industry. Again, share your knowledge openly and generously. Finally, work very hard to build and nurture the strong collaborative relationship with your product team. I'm not saying that doing all this is easy. It's not. But believe me when I tell you it's table stakes for being a successful product manager. Product manager profiles. In addition to giving you the theory and techniques in this book, I make a point of introducing you to real people, product managers who have done their job and done it well. These individuals include Jane Manning of Google, Leah Hickman of Adobe, Alex Preslin of the BBC, Martina Luchenko of Microsoft, Kate Arnold of Netflix, and Camille Hurst of Apple. Anyone who's ever worked in product for any amount of time knows that creating products is never easy. I selected these particular individuals to illustrate the very difficult but essential contribution that comes from a strong product manager. The products I highlight are all iconic, and you will immediately recognize them. But few people know the product managers behind these products, and even fewer know their backstories. Each of the product managers I selected went out of her way to emphasize to me just how amazing their product team was and how in no way was the success due to their efforts alone. But hopefully these examples help make clear to you the true and essential contribution of the product manager. The big points I hope you take away from these examples are: 1. Product management is absolutely distinct from the other disciplines. It's clearly different than the contribution of the designers, and it's also clearly not a project manager. There is some amount of project management inevitably involved, just as there is for all leadership positions. But to characterize this as a project manager is to completely miss the essence of the role. The role I would argue the product manager is most similar to is the role of the CEO. But with the obvious difference that, unlike the CEO, the product manager is not the boss of anyone. 2. Like a CEO, the product manager must deeply understand all aspects of the business. The product manager must ensure a business outcome, not just ensure a product gets defined. This requires a good understanding of the many interrelated parts and constraints of the business: financial, marketing, sales, legal, partnership, service, the customer environment, the technical capabilities, the user's experience, and figure out a solution that works for the customers as well as for the business. But don't think this means an MBA is required. Not one of the impressive product managers I feature in this book has an MBA, or that you need to have all these skills yourself. You must simply have a broad understanding of how a product can affect a business and work with people from your team and across your company to cover everything that's important. 3. In every one of these examples, the winning solutions didn't come from users, customers, or sales. Rather, great products require an intense collaboration with design and engineering to solve real problems for your users and customers in ways that meet the needs of your business. In each of these examples, the users had no idea the solution they fell in love with was possible. 4. True leadership is a big part of what separates the great product people from the merely good ones. So, no matter what your title or level may be, if you aspire to be great, don't be afraid to lead. Product manager versus product owner. You've likely encountered the term product owner, and you may wonder how it relates to the product manager job. First, product owner is the name of the role on an Agile team for the person responsible for the product backlog. Keep in mind that Agile is used in all types of companies, not just product companies. In product companies, it is critical that the product manager also be the product owner. If you split these roles into two people, some very common and predictable problems result. Most commonly, the loss of your team's ability to innovate and consistently create new value for your business and your customers. Moreover, the additional responsibilities of the product manager are what enables good product owner decisions in a product company.
Second, while I always encourage product managers to learn the development process their team is using, taking a class or certification on the product owner role covers a very small part of the responsibilities of a product manager. To summarize, product owner responsibilities are a small subset of product management responsibilities, but it's critical that the product manager covers both.
The two critical classes for product managers. Product managers come to the role from any and all disciplines. Certainly, many come from computer science, while others may come from business or economics. But you'll find great product managers that come from politics, philosophy, art, literature, history, and everything in between. If you want to be an engineer or a designer, there is an academic education to be had that will prepare you for a career in those fields. That is not the case with tech product management. That's because what's most essential for this job is the smart, creative, and persistent qualities I've discussed. That said, I believe there are two specific academic courses that every product manager should take. 1, Introduction to Computer Programming. If you have never taken a course in a programming language, then this is your first necessary class. It doesn't really matter which language, but not HTML. You can try to do this online, but I will tell you that many people struggle with learning their first programming language. Therefore, an actual course for which you're accountable for turning in programming assignments every week is what it usually takes. You may love it or you may hate it, but either way, it will fundamentally expand your technology horizons and enable you to have much richer discussions with your engineers and designers. It will also give you a better appreciation for the power of enabling technology. 2, Introduction to Business Accounting or Finance. Just as you need to know the language of computing, you also need to know the language of business. If you have never done so, you need to take a course in the basics of business finance. You will need to understand how for-profit companies work and the main business key performance indicators, KPIs, that are important to your business, including, but not limited to, lifetime value of customers, average revenue per user or customer, customer acquisition cost, cost of sales, and contribution margins, among others. A good general marketing course will often cover these topics as well. The key is to make sure you gain a big picture understanding of how businesses work. You can easily do this through a community college course or through self-study especially if you ask someone in your finance department to guide you a little. This is a good thing to do in any case. Chapter 11, The Product Designer. In this chapter, I describe the product designer role, but I'm not trying to speak here to designers. I'm aiming this at product managers who need to learn how to work effectively with designers. It's amazing to me how many companies I encounter that just don't understand why having strong and talented designers is so important. They understand the need for engineers, but often will waste significant time and money because they do not understand the need for design. Modern product designers are responsible for the following. Product discovery.
In the old model, designers took requirements or specifications from product managers and used that to create their designs.
In contrast, modern product designers continuously collaborate with product managers and engineers from discovery to delivery. Similarly, rather than sitting with fellow designers, the modern product designer sits side by side with his or her product manager, a full partner with the product manager on product discovery. Rather than being measured on the output of their design work, the product designer is measured on the success of the product. Given this, product designers have many of the same concerns as product managers. They are deeply oriented around actual customers and the value their product brings to those customers. They also understand that the product is in service of a business and can incorporate those constraints into the design of the product. Designers further understand that the user experience is as important to customer value as is the underlying functionality. Holistic user experience design. User experience, UX, is much bigger than user interface, UI. Some people even use the term customer experience to further emphasize this point. UX is any way that customers and end users realize the value provided by your product. It includes all the touch points and interactions a customer has with your company and product over time. For modern products, this usually includes multiple different interfaces, as well as other customer touch points, email, marketing campaigns, sales process, customer support, and so forth. With some products, UX also includes offline services, such as riding in a car summoned through Uber or staying in a house sourced through Airbnb. Good product designers think about the customer's journey over time as they interact with the product and with the company as a whole. Depending on the product, the list of touch points could be very long, considering questions as, how will customers first learn about the product? How will we onboard a first-time user and perhaps gradually reveal new functionality? How might users interact at different times during their day? What other things are competing for the user's attention? How might things be different for a one-month-old customer versus a one-year-old customer? How will we motivate a user to a higher level of commitment to the product? How will we create moments of gratification? How will a user share his experience with others? How will customers receive an offline service? What is the perceived responsiveness of the product? Prototyping. Later in this book, I explore the many techniques used to test out product ideas. Many of these techniques depend on prototypes, and most of these prototypes are created by the product designer. Good product designers use prototypes as their primary canvas for communicating ideas, both internally and externally. They are generally comfortable with many different prototyping tools and are able to apply the correct one for the task at hand. User testing. Good product designers are constantly testing their ideas with real users and customers. They don't just test when a prototype or idea is ready. They build testing into their weekly cadence. So they're able to constantly validate and refine ideas as well as collect new insights they might not have been looking for. It also means that they aren't as likely to become too attached to ideas before they come in contact with objective outside opinions. User testing is broader than usability testing. Product designers and their product teams utilize the opportunity to assess the value of their ideas. Will customers use or buy the product? And if not, why not? Interaction and visual design. Interaction and visual design have historically been considered separate roles. Interaction design generally includes the underlying conceptual models. For example, a photo management application may have photos, albums, projects, task flows, and control layouts to manipulate those concepts. Visual design includes the composition, typography, and how the visual brand is expressed. Modern product designers may have different strengths, but generally have some level of skill with both interaction and visual design. Having a more complete tool set allows them to work quickly at different levels of fidelity, depending on the context. It also allows them to design experiences in ways that wouldn't have been natural when thinking of interaction and visual design separately. This is particularly important in mobile interfaces in which designers must often create new models of interaction fundamentally intertwined with the visual design. If you're building devices such as consumer electronics, there's another critical dimension to design, industrial design, which looks at materials and design for manufacturing. The absence of product design. Three situations in particular are incredibly common and serious problems. One, you as product manager try to do the actual design yourself. Now, this is distinct from the situation where you are a trained designer and have also taken on the product manager responsibilities. In this situation, you have not been trained in design, yet your engineers clearly need designs, so you oblige. That usually means you provide the engineers with wireframes and they cobble together some form of visual design themselves. Two, you as product manager don't provide the designs, but rather provide very high-level user stories to the engineers. To begin coding, the engineers have no choice but to work out the design themselves. Three, you as product manager provide the interaction design, especially the wireframes, and then you use a visual or graphic designer to provide the visual design. All three situations are serious problems because they rarely provide good results. They don't provide the full holistic design we're looking for. Apple is one of the most valuable and design-conscious companies on the planet, yet few tech companies understand the importance of design talent. While everyone talks about the engineers at Google and Facebook, and their engineering is indeed strong, both companies have made huge investments in design talent. If you are building user-facing products, it's critically important that you get a trained product designer for your team. If you're doing products for consumers, I would argue that strong design today is table stakes. If you're doing products for businesses, then this is one of your best competitive differentiators. It's sad to say, but most products for businesses have awful design. They've been able to get away with this, however, because the user is so often not the customer, the one that buys. I'm happy to say that's now changing, and there's a new breed of B2B, business-to-business companies, that take design very seriously. They are displacing the old guard. In the case of products for small businesses, the user is typically the buyer, so the bar is set as high as it is for consumer products. But getting your organization to invest in design staff is only half of the solution. Here's why. Many organizations wake up one morning and suddenly realize design is important. So they spend money to bring this talent in-house, yet they set up the operation like it's an internal agency. You're supposed to bring your design requests to this group of designers, often sitting together in their own little studio. And when they're done, you get the results. If that's the way we needed to work, we'd probably continue to use external agencies. But it's not. We need design. Not just as a service to make our product beautiful, but to discover the right product. In strong teams today, the design informs the functionality at least as much as the functionality drives the design. This is a hugely important concept. For this to happen, we need to make design a first-class member of the product team, sitting side by side with the product manager and not a supporting service. Once you get a designer dedicated to your product team, here are the five keys to a successful and healthy relationship with your designer. One, do whatever you need to do to have your designer sit next to you. Two, include your designer from the very inception of every idea. Three, include your designer in as many customer and user interactions as possible. Learn about the users and customers together. Four, Fight your temptation to provide your designer with your own design ideas. Give your designer as much room as possible to solve the design challenges him or herself. 5. Encourage your designer to iterate early and often. The best way you can encourage this is to not get all nitpicky about design details with the very early iterations. More generally, encourage your designer to feel free not to just iterate on the particular design approach, but to explore alternative solutions to the problem. The bottom line is that you and your designer really are partners. You're there to discover the necessary product solutions together, and you each bring different and critical skills to the team. Chapter 12, The Engineers. In this chapter, I describe the engineering role, also commonly known as developers or, in some circles, programmers. But as with the last chapter, I'm not trying to speak here to the engineers. I'm aiming this discussion at product managers who need to learn how to work effectively with engineers. There's probably no more important relationship for a successful product manager than the one with your engineers. If your relationship is strong, with mutual and sincere respect both ways, then the product manager job is great. If your relationship is not strong, your days as product manager will be brutal and probably numbered. Therefore, this is a relationship worth taking very seriously and doing everything you can to nurture. This strong relationship begins with you. You need to do your homework and bring to the team the knowledge and skills of good product management. Engineers are typically smart and often skeptical by nature. So if you're bluffing, they likely won't be fooled. If you don't know something, it's much better to fess up and say you'll find out rather than try to bluster. It's also hugely important that you have an actual appreciation for the demands and complexities of the engineering job. If you were an engineer before, or if you've studied computer science in school, you're probably in good shape. But if not, I want to strongly encourage you to take a class at a local community college or online education where you'll learn a programming language. The purpose of developing this programming literacy is not so you start telling your engineers how to do their job, but rather to significantly improve your ability to engage with and collaborate with your engineers. Less obviously, but at least as important, this knowledge will give you a much better appreciation for technology and the art of the possible. It's also critical that you share very openly what you know about your customers, especially their pain, the data, and your business constraints. Your job is to bring this information to your team and then to discuss the various potential solutions to these problems. There is nothing wrong with you bringing a strong point of view, but you must constantly demonstrate to your team that you're open-minded. You know how to listen, and you want and need their help in coming up with the right product. As a practical matter, you need to engage directly with your engineers every workday. There are typically two types of discussions going on each day. In the first type of discussion, you're soliciting their ideas and input for the items you're working on in discovery. In the second type of discussion, they're asking you clarifying questions on the items they're working on delivering to production. Where a lot of product managers go sideways is in how they communicate with their engineers.
Just as most product managers don't like it when an executive or stakeholder spells out exactly what they want you to build, engineers generally don't like it when you try to spell out how to build something.
So, while it's good if you have a strong technology understanding, it's not good if you use that knowledge to try to do their jobs for them. You want to give your engineers as much latitude as possible in coming up with the best solution. Remember, they are the ones who will be called in the middle of the night to fix issues if they arise. One last thing to keep in mind. The morale of the engineers is very much a function of you as the product manager. It is your job to make sure they feel like missionaries and not mercenaries. You do this by involving them deeply in the customer pain you are trying to solve and in the business problems you face. Don't try to shelter them from this. Instead, share these problems and challenges very openly with them. They will respect you more for it, and in most cases, the developers will rise to the challenge. The tech lead role. There are, of course, many different types of engineers. Some focus on engineering the user experience, generally referred to as front-end developers, and some focus on specific technologies, for example, database, search, machine learning. Similarly, as with most other roles, there is a career progression for engineers. Many go on to become senior engineers, and some go from there to principal engineer or architect roles. Others move into more of an engineering leadership path, which generally starts with the tech lead role, also known as dev lead or lead engineer. In general, from the product management perspective, any senior engineer is helpful because of the broad knowledge he or she brings that pertains to what is possible. However, a tech lead not only has this knowledge
and is responsible for helping to share this knowledge with the other engineers on the team,
but the tech lead also has an explicit responsibility to help the product manager and product designer discover a strong solution. Not every engineer or even senior engineer wants to participate in discovery activities, and this is fine. What's not okay is to have a team of engineers in which none of them wants to engage in discovery activities. It is for this reason that the product manager and product designer work most closely with the tech lead. In some product teams, there may be more than one tech lead, which is all the better. It's also worth pointing out that engineers often have different work styles, which is also true for many designers. The product manager needs to be sensitive to the best way to interact.
For example, many product managers are happy to speak in front of a larger group or even a group of senior executives, but many engineers or designers are not. It's important to be sensitive to this.
Chapter 13, Product Marketing Managers. Product marketing managers are a little different from the other members of the product team. This is not because they are any less important, but because the product marketing manager is usually not a full-time dedicated member of each product team. Product marketing is most typically organized by customer-facing product, by target market, or sometimes by go-to-market channel, especially for more established companies, for example, enterprise, vertical, mid-market. There are typically fewer product marketers than product teams. As such, they get spread across different product teams. In the best tech product companies, product marketing plays an essential role in discovery, delivery, and ultimately go-to-market, which is why they are important members of the product team. As you'll soon see, coming up with winning products is never easy. We need a product that our customers love, yet also works for our business. However, a very large component of what is meant by works for our business is that there is a real market there, large enough to sustain a business. We can successfully differentiate from the many competitors out there. We can cost-effectively acquire and engage new customers. And we have the go-to-market channels and capabilities required to get our product into the hands of our customers. Product marketing is our critical partner in this. Modern product marketing managers represent the market to the product team, the positioning, the messaging, and a winning go-to-market plan. They are deeply engaged with the sales channel and know their capabilities, limitations, and current competitive issues. The nature of product marketing is a bit different depending on the type of business you have and how your product gets to market. When you make products for businesses that are sold through either a direct sales force or a channel sales organization,
it is a very significant and critical job to declare the positioning.
By that, we mean the market position the product must occupy in addition to the messaging, digital, content assets, sales tools, and training that enables sales to effectively sell. If your company has a sales organization and you don't have a product marketing partner, then this responsibility likely falls on you as product manager. This can easily become a full-time job. And given the cost of the sales organization, it's really not an option to ignore them. Of course, if you're spending your day helping the sales organization, who is figuring out the product for these people to sell? If your company sells directly to consumers, it becomes easy for the marketing teams to focus on clicks and brand at the expense of ensuring all the product work adds up to a successfully differentiated market position. This is important to the long-term prospects of any company, but also brings more meaning into all the work the product team does. It is very much in your best interest to make sure you have a product marketing manager to work with. And it's absolutely worth your time to make sure you understand the market and your product marketing colleague understands the product well enough for each of you to be successful. There are many important interactions throughout discovery and delivery, so it's worth making a special effort to develop and maintain a strong working relationship with your product marketing colleague. For example, ensuring the product team is getting good signal from a broad enough representation of the market. It also becomes important in the messaging and deciding on the go-to-market plan based on these early product signals. Note here that I am talking about the modern definition of the product marketing role. I am not describing the old model wherein product marketing was responsible for defining the product and product management was primarily responsible for working with engineering to deliver that product. Having a strong product marketing partner does not diminish in any sense the product manager's responsibility for delivering a successful product. The best product marketing manager and product manager relationships understand their respective roles, but realize they are essential to each other's success. Chapter 14, The Supporting Roles. So far, we've talked about your role as product manager. We've also talked about the designers, engineers, and product marketing managers you'll be working with very closely every day. But there are other people in supporting roles you'll also work with. These people will probably not be dedicated solely to your team, as they are typically assigned to a small number of other product teams. Now, you might not have any of the people I'm about to describe available to you. It really depends on the size and type of organization you work at.
If you're at a small startup, you very probably will have none of these roles, and you will need to cover these activities yourself.
But if you're at a company that has some or all of these roles, I want you to know why they exist and, most important, how to make the best use of these people. User researchers. As you'll soon see, when we talk about how we do product discovery, we are continuously doing two kinds of rapid learning and experimentation. One kind of learning is qualitative, and the other is quantitative. Especially with the qualitative learning, some of our research is generative, which is understanding the problems we need to solve, and some of our research is evaluative, which is assessing how well our solutions solve the problem. User researchers are trained in this range of qualitative techniques, and some of them are also trained on the quantitative techniques as well. They can help you find the right type of users, craft the right types of tests, and learn the most from each user or customer interaction. The key to tapping into the real value that these user researchers can provide is to keep in mind that the learning must be shared learning. You need to witness the insights firsthand. More on this when we talk about the principles of product discovery, but while I want you to appreciate what user research can help you with, I don't want you to think you can delegate to them to do the learning and then send you a report. If your company does not have user researchers, then your product designer will typically pick up these responsibilities for your team. Data analysts. Similarly, for quantitative learning, data analysts help teams collect the right sort of analytics, manage data privacy constraints, analyze the data, plan live data tests, and understand and interpret the results. Sometimes data analysts go by the name business intelligence, BI, analysts, and they're experts in the types of data that your business collects and reports. It is well worth making friends with your data analysts. So much of product work today is data-driven, and these people can be real gold mines for you and your organization. In some companies, especially those with a lot of data, such as larger consumer companies, this may be a full-time role dedicated to a specific product team.
In this case, the data analyst would be sitting and working alongside the product manager and product designer.
If your company does not have any data analysts, then responsibility for this typically falls on the product manager. If this is the case, you'll probably need to plan to spend significant time diving deep into the data to understand your situation and make good decisions. Test automation engineers. Test automation engineers write automated tests for your product. They have largely replaced the old-style manual quality assurance, QA, people. Now, it's very possible that your engineers are responsible both for writing software and for writing these automated tests. If that's the case, then you probably won't have many test automation engineers. But most companies have a blended approach in which the engineers write some of the automated tests, for example, the unit level tests, and the test automation engineers write the higher level automated tests. Whichever model your company has is typically up to the engineering leadership, which is fine. However, what's not okay is if your company doesn't have test engineers and your engineers don't do the testing either, and they are looking to you as product manager to do the quality testing. While it's true as product manager, you want to make sure things are generally as you expect before things go live, acceptance testing, that's a far cry from being able to release with confidence. The level of test automation necessary to release with confidence is significant and a big job. It's not unusual in complex products to have multiple test engineers dedicated to each product team. Chapter 15, Profile, Jane Manning of Google. I'm sure you have heard of Google's AdWords, and you may have also heard that this product is what fuels the Google empire. To be specific, as of this writing, AdWords is currently 16 years old, and in the most recent year alone, it generated well over $60 billion in revenue. Yes, that's B as in billions. What I'm guessing most of you don't know, however, is just how this industry-defining product came to be, and especially how close this product came to never happening at all. The year was 2000, and the hardest part about the AdWords project was simply getting an agreement to work on it.
The core idea had support from Larry Page, but the idea immediately encountered some pretty strong resistance from both the ad sales team and the engineering team.
Jane Manning was a young engineering manager asked to serve as product manager for this effort to try to get it off the dime. The new sales team, under Omid Kordestani, was off to a strong start selling keywords to large brands and placing the results at the top of the search results. These results were highlighted as an ad, but still very prominent, much in the style that had been done in search results at other companies, including at Netscape, where Omid came from. Sales was nervous that this idea of a self-service advertising platform would diminish the value of what the sales team was trying to sell, known as cannibalization. And the engineers, who had been working so hard to provide highly relevant search results, were understandably very worried that users would be confused and frustrated by ads getting in the way of their search results. Jane sat down with each of these people to get a deeper understanding of their concerns. Some were just plain uncomfortable with advertising. Others were worried about cannibalization, and yet others were concerned about potential user unhappiness. Once Jane understood the constraints and concerns, she had the information she needed to advocate for a solution that she believed would address the issues, yet enable countless small businesses to get a much more effective advertising solution. Jane was also able to persuade one of Google's earliest and most respected engineers, Georges Harik, of the idea's potential, and he helped to bring along other engineers. The product solution they ended up with placed the AdWords-generated ads to the side of the search results so they wouldn't be confused with the salesperson-sold ads, which were displayed on the top of the results. Also, instead of determining placement based solely on the price paid, they would use a formula that multiplied the price paid per impression with the ad's performance, click-through rate, to determine placement, so that the best performing ads, the ones most likely to be most relevant to users, would rise to the top, and the worst ads would be unlikely to be displayed at all, even if they were sold at a higher price. This solution clearly differentiated for the sales team and ensured quality search results, whether paid or organic. Jane led the product discovery work and wrote the first spec for AdWords. Then she worked side by side with the engineers to build and launch the product, which was hugely successful. This is yet another example of how there are always so many good reasons for products not to get built. In the products that succeed, there is always someone like Jane, behind the scenes, working to get over each and every one of the objections, whether they're technical, business, or anything else. Jane took a break to start a family and is now back at Google once again, this time helping out the YouTube team. People at scale. Overview. Most companies know that they need to double down on their efforts to recruit very strong staff as they grow, but they don't always know what other changes are important as they grow and scale. What are the changes in the leadership roles? How do we maintain the holistic view of product when we have many teams? How do we keep teams feeling empowered and autonomous when they just own a small part of the whole? How do we encourage accountability when the only person that owns everything is the CEO? How do we deal with the explosion of dependencies? These are the topics we will tackle as we discuss how strong product organizations scale. Chapter 16, The Role of Leadership. The primary job of leadership in any technology organization is to recruit, to develop, and to retain strong talent.
However, in a product company, the role goes beyond people development and into what we call holistic view of product.
For a startup, there's typically just one or two product teams, so it's not too hard for everyone to keep in their heads a holistic view of the product.
However, this quickly becomes much tougher as the company grows, first to a larger product, and soon to many product teams.
One of the big challenges of growth is knowing how the whole product hangs together. Some people like to think of holistic view as connecting the dots between the teams. The three distinct but critical elements of the holistic view of product are described next. Leaders of product management. To ensure a holistic view of how the entire system fits together from a business point of view, product vision, strategy, functionality, business rules, and business logic, we need either the leaders of the product management organization, VP product, directors of product, or a principal product manager. This person should regularly review the work of the various product managers and product teams, identifying and helping to resolve conflicts. For large-scale organizations, some companies prefer this to be an individual contributor role, for example, a principal product manager, but let me be clear that this is a very senior role, usually equivalent to a director-level manager. Since the head of product is first and foremost responsible for building the skills of the product managers, a dedicated principal product manager is able to focus on the product itself and is readily accessible as a critical resource to all the product managers, product designers, engineers, and test automation staff. If you use a principal product manager for this, he or she should be a direct report to the head of product so that everyone understands the importance of the role and the responsibilities of that person. Whether this role is covered by the head of product or a principal product manager, this is a critically essential role for companies with large and complex business systems, especially with many legacy systems. Leaders of product design. One of the most important roles in a company is the person or people responsible for the holistic user experience. These leaders must ensure a consistent and effective user experience system-wide. This is sometimes the leader of the product design team.